In Conversation with Dr. Eve.
Yup, folks feel nothing. Yeah, folks feel nothing for George Wheel says, Aubrey, last night you were adamant you have no sympathy for criminals and now you feel sorry for them. No, I feel nothing for their criminality and I still believe that whoever is found guilty must face the music. I'm just saying that I had a moment of feeling in a particular way. somebody says, or Tafara says, good evening, Aubrey. If the former speaker, who herself is a former minister of correctional services, deems the prison system inhabitable, why didn't she improve it and who is it habitable for? Our schools are under par for Minister of Education, hospitals, clinics, unhealthy, and so forth. But the sense here is that very few people feel these pangs of sympathy that I'm feeling for me. Mana Lady says, not for me, Aubrey, not for me. Tafara says, directly affected is the key phrase there, Aubrey. Most people do not feel directly affected by crimes such as corruption, drug peddling, trafficking, fraud. Very sad. Somebody else says, you indeed controversial tonight. Well, if they also think of us before they do the crime, we won't be there, says Ade. Good evening, team. Clive says, Braops, I don't think your feelings about the accused is necessarily shared by the majority of your listeners, says Clive. Yeah, it looks like it, Clive. Another one says, shame, Braops, you're really a softy, bro. When they committed the crime, they never thought of the consequence to follow. Did they think about those who will be affected? No, that the devil had cheap. That is hella alien, says AJ Clown. Taki the tutor says, good evening, Aubrey. In the face of truth, all arrogance, greed, and envy fall away. Everyone at some point will face the harsh reality called truth. No one escapes this ever, says this person. Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that she needs to escape anything. I'm simply saying that, Akshem. Akshem. And I'm not saying that she should escape the consequences of her action. I'm simply saying in that moment, I'm feeling very sad for her. Dr. Eve is now on the line. Good evening to you, Dr. Eve. Are you well?
I'm fine, Aubrey. How are you?
I'm in a lot of trouble with the listeners.
Okay, yeah. They don't like that compassionate part of you.
Huh? Yeah, they thinking, Bruce, sorry, buddy. We love you and everything, but sorry, but we feel nothing for the auntie. She must face the music and so forth. But just as I digress a little bit, Dr. Eve, I know we're going to...
Is that
a consistent human... reaction. I am livid at the allegations of criminality and corruption. I am absolutely have no sympathy for that.
Yeah.
But watching the former minister or the former speaker in the dock during the day in court and her being so forlorn and lonely, I really did feel pangs of compassion for her. Is that bad? Is that weird?
Well, I think you know already from working with me, there are no bad parts, and what you're expressing is a human condition of affiliation and of compassion, and doesn't mean that you are agreeing or
not at all
to her behavior. Right? You're very clear around that. So the behavior, you're separating the behavior of this person from the person herself.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, you can still be very judgmental or very clear around the behavior, which is, you know, awful for you and for all of us. But you're seeing a person who's acting in a humble way and lonely. And as a human, that touches, you know, the affiliation part of your heart.
So it's not a duplicitous, hypocritical kind of thing, because I'm feeling it. I'm standing up and I'm saying I'm feeling it. And if it's duplicitous, if it's hypocritical, then it is what it is. But I'm still very clear about the fact that I am, I'm very much against what she's accused of. And by the way, we still need to get through a place where we know that she's guilty. But I did feel pangs of compassion for her as she stood there. And you're saying to me that's not necessarily duplicitous or hypocritical.
It's not a betrayal of what you are feeling in terms of the injustice towards you and towards our country.
Yeah.
It's not a betrayal of that. The two are not linked. They're two different parts. There's a part of you that is showing, I repeat, human compassion towards somebody who you've seen in a different posture, who has a different kind of facial expression. And as you know, beautifully described, her loud voice is no longer loud. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that she used to walk, she no longer walks that way because she's bent over in shame and guilt.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what the part of you resonates, you know, the caring, compassionate part resonates with that. It's not comfortable for you to see a human in that position. But I'm saying again, it doesn't mean that you are accepting of the behavior of this person. You're very clear around that, Aubrey. Yeah, you are.
Dr. Eve, thank you very much. That's why I love you, Dr. Eve. Let's talk about the trauma of death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it links very much also to the story which is in the news right now around the death of the deaths of A.K.M. Tibbs, which would be described as an unexpected death. And we can hear even from the listeners now just touching on it as we've been hearing, you know, for a while, the reaction of not even their beloveds, but just of the country, of the stirring up of emotion that happens around specifically an unexpected death. And so that's where we're going tonight is giving a forum to our listeners to be able to share their grief, their experience, their own very personal and very intimate experience of what has happened to them when somebody who they feel close to has died. And we are going to focus specifically on the different kinds of bereavements and the different kinds of traumas that one does feel at the time of a person dying. And we're going to focus on the unexpected death as AK and Tibbs have experienced in this country. And in fact, some statistics just to kind of get us going of looking how many people do die in the UK, 500,000 people. This was in about 2022. The statistic came out, 500,000 people died in the UK. But what's important to know is that on average, five close people were left behind of those 500,000. So you've got to multiply that 500,000 by five to see how many people are traumatized by one person dying. In South Africa, we of course have a higher number of people who die every year. In 22, it was 663.75 people died in the year. And what I found interesting to highlight is that, I'm sure you're not surprised by this, Aubrey, but interpersonal violence, men on men, was the fifth leading cause of death in men in South Africa. Interpersonal violence, fifth leading cause of death in men. You know, we always talk about interpersonal violence on women, but the interpersonal violence and the conflict that exists in this country between men is the fifth leading cause of death. So once again, let's extrapolate that to think about us who are left behind and what is the impact that that has on us? What is the trauma that we have? And so as we begin, once again, I do want to just say for people who are listening, there could be a trigger event that happens to you if you are experiencing a loss now, or you haven't processed the trauma, the bereavement and the grief. There may be some kind of trigger event that happens to you. And as you well know, you have every ability and agency to turn off the radio and to come back to Aubrey at 9 o'clock or to take care of yourself and join in the conversation as we open up the forum for those of us who are grieving the loss of somebody and to really be able to resonate, I'm hoping, around what you're experiencing as being something which happens to the majority of us, the PTSD, the grief disorders, which happen specifically around sudden traumatic losses, you know, the sudden ones, the suicide, the sudden accident, somebody dying of a disease in a month, just very suddenly, the loss of a child, and what the impact of that violent death is. You know, 1 minute you're there, the next minute somebody's been stabbed to death or shot to death. And nine in Natal just shot to death, criminals shot to death, their people. And what does it do to the people who are left behind? Is there a space to process it? You know, we're offering that space now. And just to continue talking, you know, what kind of prompted me, because I always like to give it some kind of context.
Yeah.
What prompted me to even go into this place, because we have death as just a kind of a natural process in this country, natural state. There is, I happened to come across a popped up in my Netflix a documentary called Endgame, and I would usually avoid it because he wants to kind of, you know, listen, watch, be exposed to death. And I just started watching, and it was elegant and beautiful. It was all about palliative care. And in fact, this documentary was nominated for an Academy Award for the best short documentary. The most beautiful, elegant way of being able to die in a very respectful manner. And I thought, this is really interesting. You know, what happens to the people who are left behind? And that's why I kind of, you know, started doing some research, thinking, talking about it, and thought, let's bring it here. Let's create a forum for us to be able to look at what has been the impact of unexpected death or a death, just a general grieving process that you have experienced. How have you managed it? What are the symptoms that you've experienced with this? And maybe you're not aware that perhaps you have or do have still some kind of PTSD as a result of somebody dying, and you haven't given yourself the time or haven't ritualized it or haven't gone through almost a religious or ceremonial process where you are held in community and you're able to really, you know, be present with your grief. Mm. What have you done about that?
Yeah. Somebody on Twitter has just sent me a message. I haven't read the article that he points to. His name is Johanna Rabane. And he says, please ask the doctor, how does society deal with the devastating effect of death and rape relating to this article? Now, the article relates to the genocide in Rwanda.
Oh, yeah?
And how people were killed. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people, maybe even millions of people who were killed in that war. Also there is in the article, as far as I can gather, I have not read the article because it's just come in as we were speaking. You know, children that were born out of a rape encounter, because rape was used as a weapon in that war, as it is in many other wars.
In every war.
And it appears that this is a question that Johan Robain is dealing with in his mind, and asking, how does society deal with the devastating effect of death? And I suppose that's why we're having this conversation. This conversation is partly part of how we try to make sense of some of these very devastating moments in our lives.
I'm not sure what Johan is really referring to, because as you were talking, it's like somebody who's been raped or somebody who's a child born, there's a part of one that dies. I mean, I think they're part of, you know, there are parts of us who die when we're in abusive relationships. Yeah. Part of us can die when we're experiencing, and I know I'm really segueing out of this death, unexpected deaths, but there are different kinds of deaths. Yeah. Like even with an infidelity, a part of you dies. With the betrayal of any kind, financial, of any kind of life, you know, part of us dies. But we're talking specifically, let me stay focused here, around the incredible trauma specifically related to when somebody's died. So if we look at what happens to us with any kind of traumatic loss, with any kind of loss that we do experience, you know, what is it when we feel bereaved? What is the usual human condition? We feel anxious and sad and angry, and we're shocked and feel grief-stricken, withdrawn, hollowed, empty, disbelief, guilty, sad, denial. We can go through all of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages up and down that ladder. We can't sleep, we can't concentrate, appetite, difficult to make decisions, you know, but what we're really looking at, because that would be a healthy kind of grieving process, but what most people, it can happen to, and that's what happens to most people. And eventually it lessens, the intensity of the grief and the loss lessens. And we'll talk about new ways of treatment, which I think are fascinating. It's more around the extremities of it, which happen, I'm repeating, with unexpected death, with the sudden loss of a suicide. You know, if anyone has experienced a suicide of somebody, or the loss of a child, or even a miscarriage, or a child that is a stillborn, you know, those are unexpected deaths that have happened to you. And they have quite specific mental health symptoms that come along with it. And those are the ones that, you're going to be more at risk for, you know, for post-traumatic stress disorder. And when you have this post-traumatic stress disorder, which has very specific symptoms, I'm repeating, it seems to inhibit your natural process of grieving. So that people who do have PTSD, they then risk moving into what's called prolonged or enduring grief. Mm. And that's kind of very different to what I described earlier on, where there is the expectation of I'm going to be, you know, disturbed, anxious, sad, in denial, go through, as I said, the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross stages of denial, and anger, and bargaining, depression, acceptance, and then jumping back into bargaining, jumping into denial, jumping into acceptance, back into depression, up and down that ladder. That's what we expect. But perhaps there are people who have experienced more traumatic bereavements and really feel, I'm pretty stuck here. How do I get unstuck? I can't let go.
I imagine people who haven't, I think one of the things, the word you used was the word ritualize.
Yeah.
The finality of death, you know? And I know that there have been people who, particularly in the very bad old days of apartheid, where people were just disappeared, just gone.
God, Aubrey, there we go.
And nothing, just not there anymore. This person is just not there anymore. There's no, and I remember listening to a mother at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission saying, listen, I don't care whether people go to jail or not go to jail. Just tell me where my son's body is.
Yeah.
So it seems to me
that's another whole part.
Huh? Yeah, as though the issue that you raise about how the grief can almost change gears.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds as if the grief can change gears. You know my story, Dr. Eve. My dad died last year, and I went through a process of grieving, but there's a finality to it. I'm starting to feel better. I'm starting to feel, I'm starting to feel a sense of closure. But I imagine a person whose loved one, son, daughter, husband, dies. I mean, disappears, and all probabilities are that that person was killed, because that's the story of our past. And there's just no closure. I don't know what that could feel like.
As you're talking, I'm remembering that just today I was reading that South Africa has the highest incidence of kidnapping. I mean, some incredibly crazy number of people are kidnapped every day in this country. It's become a big business, right?
Yep.
So that you never know and you never hear. I mean, we've got this situation right now with Jocelyn. She's just disappeared, right?
Gone,
where there's no closure, as you describe it, Aubrey. So how are people managing to keep going? Are you suffering from what is known in the DSM-5 as persistent complex bereavement disorder, which would be bereavement due to a homicide or a suicide with persistent distressing preoccupations regarding the traumatic nature of the death, including thinking about the deceased's last moments, the degree of suffering they had, or any kind of mutilating injury they had, or the malicious or intentional nature of the death, and you're ruminating about it. Have you processed that? Are you managing that? How are you taking care of that?
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the other reality, Dr. Eve, of in the ritualization process of somebody who's passed on, because of whatever family politics we might have, somebody can be barred from coming to the funeral.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I've seen that too, where somebody is completely barred from coming to the funeral. And my sense is that the funeral is the ritual that provides the closure and allows us, therefore, to be able to deal with the grief. Because we are part of a collective, we're part of a group of people that are feeling similar feelings about the loss of somebody. But if you're barred from sharing in that ritual, I can imagine that too can be very, very difficult.
Yeah, because you, excluded from being in community and having a shared grieving experience. I'm very aware of that when people, clients of mine, have family members who die and they kind of back to work the next day. There isn't a transition, right? There isn't any kind of ceremony that they've been able to go through, and most importantly, through community, to be able to be present for a little while in that grief. So that's going to incline you more towards PTSD. And with the symptoms of that are very different. They are heightened anxiety and depression, much higher risk of addictions and violence. You're just in a much riskier place. And then with that, as we well know with trauma, you're at risk for more physical illnesses. So this can become a public health issue. And it's a very stressful event for children. And if we're talking about children, Aubrey, I mean, who is actually discussing or managing the trauma that children experience when a parent is suddenly lost?
Yes. Give us a call then. Sorry, Dr. Eve, go ahead.
I'm just thinking of most recently, just during the December holidays, really, one of my clients called and said, my ex-wife just dropped dead from a heart attack yesterday, and I don't know how to tell my son. Our son, he's 7 years old. How do I tell him? His mother's just died. Right. And he had the sense to reach out.
Yeah.
And say help. And I immediately, you know, could arrange trauma counseling and support and so on to avoid and to prevent this child from developing PTSD and to put him through, you know, a grieving process, to hold him through a grieving process, which would normalize the grief. And therefore, there is less risk of him developing PTSD and all the symptoms thereof.
Give us a call, 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567 if you're in Cape Town. We're talking about the trauma of death. Perhaps you might have some stories that you want to share with us about the trauma of death that you've experienced, and perhaps what has followed as a result. Dr. Eve has touched on things such as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, bereavement and prolonged grief disorders. Have you perhaps been affected in that way? I'd love to take those calls on 011-883-0702. PTSD in this context, Dr. Eve, just tell me, show me what it looks like.
So I'm going to quote to you from, I've given you some, the DSM-5, which don't put it in as PTSD specifically for dying. They speak about persistent complex bereavement disorder. And let's turn to the ICD-11, the ICD's International Classification of Diseases, the latest edition. And they talk about the complications of grief. And for the first time, in other words, if you are suffering from this, you can go to your doctor and say, I'm suffering from this, or he can diagnose you with the complications of grief, and you will be paid out, you'll be given a code, and your medical aid will pay you out. And what these symptoms are, how you would be diagnosed as such, would be if over extended period of time, you are feeling that the disturbance causes significant impairment in your personal, in your family, your social, your educational, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. So it's looking at what we call a biopsychosocial approach, where it recognizes that there is distinct disturbance, which not only is going to affect you, but it's going to go in, and it's going to move out into the rest of your own psychosocial world. You can hear your personal, your family, your social, education, in other words, your cognitive functioning. If we look at what trauma is, as you know, it disrupts cognitive ability, emotional ability, puts you at risk for behaviors that could be out of control, and also makes it very difficult for you to feel safe in intimate situations. So it disrupts all of that, keeps you grounded and really functioning in a way that you're able to work and to be intimate and to be social and to be able to be a parent or to be able to care for the child. One needs to be able to do that. So there is a recognition in the medical community that this is a very significant situation, and therefore we are raising it so people feel that they have the right to be able to notice when their grief is too prolonged or when it is extending into a place where they are developing these PTS symptoms, are feeling highly dysregulated, highly alert, nightmares are ongoing, they're very easily triggered, they feel as if they, their mood cannot come back to a level of feeling neutral where they're able to cope. So usual PTSD symptoms of grief, go to your doctor, go and get the help, because you have a right to be doing that when you feel that is happening. When you have, as I was saying earlier, the thoughts, the images, and especially if you haven't had the closing, the images of was my child hurt? How badly was she beaten or he beaten? What happened in the accident? One of my clients told me recently they were witness to a car accident and went straight there because a family member was involved. And in the head-on collision, they arrived, the smoke was still going through the cars, and the car that had gone into their car had literally just squashed, and two people were squashed inside, and they, you know, he was looking at two dead people suddenly right there. You have to talk about it. You have to go through a process.
I think what you've
able to grieve it.
Dr. Eve, what you've just said now is the reason why we're having this conversation, is so that people can identify and be comfortable in the knowledge that what they may be going through is not outside of the, I'm even afraid to say this, but it's not outside of the norm when it comes to this particular issue. That indeed post-traumatic stress disorder under these circumstances can be something that is quite normal, and that it's not something that we should be afraid to talk about and seek help for, because I think that some may feel that this is a conversation that really isn't going anywhere, that speaking of very, very scary stuff, maybe very, very heart-wrenching stuff, but so what? But I think it's so important what you've just said, that these incidents happen, and we need to be able to talk about them and understand that there is help out there if we understand exactly what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, and another fact which may incline people towards better self-care or permission to be able to seek out and reach out for the help is, in one study that was done, Aubrey, it was cited that the unexpected death was the most common traumatic experience and was most likely to be rated as the respondent's worst experience, regardless of any other traumatic experience. So the unexpected death, and why is it like that? It's because the unexpected death provokes especially strong responses, because according to the research, there's less time to prepare for the death and less time to adapt to the death.
Yeah.
You know, your child goes driving on a highway, and you say goodbye, then you get a call, right? That's it.
Dr. Eve, we have a number of calls.
Let's go for it.
Let's take some of those calls. Mpikeleli is in Tembisa. Hi, Mpikeleli.
Hey, well, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Mpikeleli. What's on your mind, sir?
Yeah, four years back, we had an accident with my daughter on Ellen Road. We were from Africa Mall. So we were riding a red taxi. She was sitting on the lap of another lady next to me there. That lady, she got injured on her feet. My daughter was fine. I was fine. But now the problem is, when every time you go ride a taxi, if the red taxi comes from a distance, she told me, no, Baba, we don't ride this one. Please don't take this one. Don't take this one. So even if we take even a quantum, maybe let's say a white taxi, when she sits on the seat, you can see she hold on the other seat, she look around, and she's like 10 years, this year. Like, she was 10, 11 this year. You just imagine, like, 5 years back, she was like 6 years, but still, like, I can't take her anywhere. I need to go alone if I have to go to mall, buy her something. Sometimes I even go alone. Sometimes, I don't know how much I do
Before you go, Piccadilly, did the lady that she was, whose lap she was sitting on, did the lady pass on?
No, she didn't pass on. She was injured right there on the legs. Yeah, she didn't pass on. Yeah.
Okay.
Because we end up going to the hospital, Timmy's hospital, together with that lady. And when we arrive there, she keep on pointing blood on the floor. Baba, look at this blood there. Baba.
No, she was.
And she's scared. Yeah.
She was obviously traumatized. Piccadilly. Let's see what the doctor has to say. Yeah. Right. Thanks very much for your call, and thanks very much for sharing this. Appreciate it, Piccadilly. Dr. Eve.
Just, you're very brief.
There was no death, but there was absolute
association
trauma,
is there. You can hear absolutely the association of her experience of what she felt, the absolute terror that she felt, and then the visuals as well, the sounds. So now she's going to be avoidant of getting into a taxi again. And you can, what is concerning is that it's been going on for 6 years, because she was 4 years old, now she's 10 years old, right? So I really would want him to take his daughter, first of all, just to say to him, thank you for noticing that.
Yeah.
And to take her to Lifeline, or to speak to Lifeline, and get her to go into, it's not therapy like adults, but there would be play therapy. There would be opportunity for her to be able to tell her story and to learn how to live with it, to realize, that happened then, it's not going to happen now, and how to manage the trigger responses around that. You know, there's specific, obviously, techniques of managing that PTSD, but she certainly has every right to do that, because as you can hear, the worrying part is that she begins to isolate herself, right? She's saying, I don't want to go to the mall, I don't want to get into a taxi, because she anticipates feeling the same way, that helpless terror when it did happen. And he has to keep telling her, this isn't going to happen now, that happened then, it's not going to happen again. It's something that happened then, and we survived it. And because you don't want her to become isolated.
Sure.
You know, her life will become limited. Yes. And that leads to all kinds of loneliness, depression, anxiety, and so on.
Let's take a call from Peggy in Davidton. Hi, Peggy.
How are you, bros?
Very good, thanks, my brother. What's on your mind?
Yes, bro. Mm. Thanks for this topic, eh?
Sure.
Last year, January, I lost my mom. Mm. And when I got the call, everything was just normal. I wanted to be strong for everybody. And a week after that, he started to sink in now that she's really gone. Mm. And I went to a very, very dark place. I ignored the fact that I was hurting until December last year.
Mm.
I nearly lost my job. I started drinking very, very heavily.
Mm.
I had suicidal thoughts. And then January 2nd or 3rd, I admitted myself to a mental wellness, and still it didn't help.
Mm.
So they put me on antidepressants. My finances are bad. Everything is bad. I'm not even speaking to you right now.
Yeah.
I'm really not in a good space.
Mm.
I work as a driver. So every time when I'm driving, I feel like I can just go straight to the truck every day. Props is bad.
Oh, my brother. All right. Let's hear what Dr. Eve has to say, Beggy. But thank you very much for just having the presence of mind as we talk about this to call in. I think that's a very significant part of the battle won already. Dr. Eve?
I agree. Just noting the response, which is quite common and maybe around for men more than for women. I want to be strong for everyone. And so the feelings get suppressed down.
Yeah.
And then when there is a bit of an empty space, as what happened to Peggy, it's suddenly the awareness of it comes up. So this is a beautiful new kind of treatment modality that's used, Orbi, which is quite wonderful. You know, back in the day, it was just cognitive therapy. Let's rework it. Let's get your thoughts into a different place. And today what they do is a storytelling. And it's a story of the death, because it would be like, get over it. You know, the person is dead and now you've got to live without the person. And today it's very different. It's about, you want to learn to live with the person, that your relationship with the dead person still has to be continued. It can still be continued. One of the things that is used is something called letter writing. It's seen that in this way, grieving is what's called a reworking, a maintenance of the same attachment bond with your mother, Becky, with whoever else has lost somebody, rather than just a severance, rather than just like that's the end. It's about what's called a continuation of the bond, finding a way to continue it, having what's called a living dialogue, keeping a journal, a diary, a letter writing that just involves getting you to write a letter to your mother, telling her whatever you would have told her when she was alive, sharing your life with her, knowing what she would respond, continuing the relationship through letter writing, reworking, maintaining that attachment bond so that it doesn't feel so absolutely traumatic. Mm. You form a different kind of relationship with the person that you've lost. And I think it's a very beautiful way of managing the finality of, especially the unexpected death of somebody.
Sure, Peggy. Good luck to you, brother. Tabo is in Pretoria. Hi, Tabo.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Eve and Bra Aubrey. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Tabo. Go ahead, sir.
Great. I'll be quick. So I joined the conversation just 10 minutes ago. So I'm just, you know, calling because some of the reactions and responses that Dr. Eve has mentioned, I'm sort of sensing and identifying in my own story. So I just wanted to find out, mine is not about losing someone to death or, you know, to an accident or kidnapping or something like, or anything like that, but it's about a breakup following a very, very long-term relationship. And, you know, the feelings that Dr. E spoke of, you know, of the dissociation, the depression, and it's really affecting, you know, a lot of the stuff that's happening in my day-to-day life and my functioning. But I think it might also be compounded by the fact that there's also like a traumatic criminal event, you know, that happened shortly after the breakup. It's been like a month now. So my question is, can that also still be considered the same kind of grief and the same kind of PTSD that we're talking about in this conversation, even though there was not a death or that kind of severe loss?
Dr. Eve, you did touch on this earlier on, but I think it's great that Tabo asks the question. Tabo, listen on the radio, please. Thanks very much. Go ahead, Dr. Eve.
You're right. I did touch on it, saying that there are different ways of dying, different losses and different deaths, and this would certainly be one of them, Tabo, that a breakup with somebody, and you even use the language, you know, the loss of somebody. So it feels like a significant loss for you. Mm-hmm. And if you identify with some of the symptoms that I've named, hey, then get yourself into some kind of counseling, reach into grief counseling. You know, there's specialized grief counselors who can help. And then you had the traumatic break-in afterwards. So that's going to be compounding, not giving you time to be able to process and to manage some of those symptoms. It's going to bring in other kinds of symptoms from an unexpected traumatic experience that happens. So definitely don't hesitate to reach out to somebody for some grief counseling. The loss of a relationship is definitely a form of you know, it's a small death, a small T, we would call it,
Dr. Eva, I want to thank you for this conversation because I think it's really given us the words, the almost the permission to be able to talk about things that are very difficult to talk about. And I think that just from the calls, you can hear that people find relief in being able to be given the space to talk about this sort of issue. How do people get in touch with you as we close?
Just to follow me and Dr. Eve on all social media platforms and WhatsApp me. I'm available and we'll chat wherever I can. So just keep following me.